can run TV commercials explaining the program and explaining the that's a very unique thing, by the way. Yeah. How many of you have seen TV commercials in your jurisdictions on some new innovative government program? Private partnership laws allow projects across a broad swath of infrastructure classes here, including toll roads, schools, energy, wastewater, water, solid waste, ports, information technology, and more. And what's unique about it is most states have started in the transportation sector and stayed there for a long time and haven't branched out yet beyond that into other sectors of infrastructure. And Puerto Rico's already launched its program with a much more broad scope. It also established something called the Public-Private Partnership Authority. And that's a new center of excellence within the government here to evaluate and select these public-private partnership infrastructure projects and to monitor and enforce the terms of those contracts. And in just 2 short years since they've been in operation, the authority, I would say, has built a world-class program and has already seen some major successes, and we're going to talk about some of those today. Just for quick examples as an intro, to help modernize K-12 school facilities and improve their academic performance, the PPP Authority in Puerto Rico has launched the Schools for the 21st Century initiative, under which Puerto Rico is modernizing and working with private contractors to modernize, design, build, and maintain approximately 100 schools across Puerto Rico. They've also, in June of last year, they selected the winning bidder for a 40-year, over $1 billion concession for two of their toll road facilities. They've also launched a procurement more recently for a long-term lease of the San Juan International Airport, which most of you probably flew into. And last week, the authority announced that it's going to begin seeking private partners to finance, build, and maintain a new 600-bed juvenile treatment center. Now, those of us interested in advancing free minds and free markets, we often lament that there are often many more ideas for government reform than public officials actually implementing them. So it's really always an enriching and reaffirming experience to discover innovative leaders proactively taking market-based solutions from concept to implementation. So we are thrilled to have one of those leaders with us today, someone who's been very critical to Puerto Rico's success in building their infrastructure program into what has become a world-class infrastructure program. So without further ado, it's my honor and privilege to introduce you to our special guest for this session, David Alvarez. David Alvarez is...
Thank you. Thank you, Lynn. Thank you, everyone.
By way of introduction, David is the executive director of the Puerto Rico Public-Private Partnerships Authority. He runs the program that I just described. Prior to his appointment at the authority, he served as senior advisor and special aide to the chairman and president of the Government Development Bank for Puerto Rico and as chief analyst at Santander Securities and Santander Bancorp Puerto Rico. He has a Master of Science in Urban and Regional Planning from Florida State and a bachelor's degree in economics from West Virginia University. So please join me in welcoming David.
Thank you once again.
Thank you, David. So, as I've described, over the last 2 years, Puerto Rico has significantly shifted its approach to infrastructure development by embracing public-private partnerships as a major component of your strategy to fill your funding gap and to solve some of your problems. Can you describe the fiscal and economic factors that led to the development of your public-private partnership
program? Sure. Let me start by, again, expressing my gratitude for the invitation. I think this is very exciting to be here with you. Sharing our experience, I think we have, under the leadership of our governor, we have made substantial progress in renovating infrastructure in Puerto Rico, and the idea that there's a role for the private sector in infrastructure, that at the end of the day, what we're looking for is to bring fresh capital for fresh investment into the economy, create jobs, and look for innovation in the delivery of public services. In many of the infrastructure. All this started with, obviously, with a clear need to bring this about. And let me just tell you what the background is. Just responding to your question, Len, this is the rate of investment that we were having in infrastructure in Puerto Rico. What you're seeing here is 10 years of history of the percentage of our GDP dedicated to infrastructure. And obviously in the decade of between 1990s and 2000, that went very well, we were investing around 4% of our GDP in infrastructure. And one element that contributed to having such a high level of just a normal level of investment in infrastructure was that it was complemented, public investment in infrastructure was complemented with private participation. In the decade between the 1990s and the 2000s, we have a couple of co-generators of electricity funded, fully funded by infrastructure, private persons, actually. And private investment was complementing the entire public effort and investment without crowding it, without replacing it, but just providing an additional flux of investment. Everything was abandoned after the 2000, and this is what you have, and this is from 4%, we're back in 2009, we're experiencing just 1.6%, which is half of what nations and what the U.S. is actually investing in infrastructure. In general terms, at healthy, or at least the minimum level of investment in infrastructure should be around 3% or 3.5% of GDP. And this is what we have. So this coincided when you have such a high level of investment infrastructure, we were growing at a 3% in real terms of the economy. Now we were contracting 4%. So we had a very deep recession, obviously, that coincided with this level of investment. So one of the reasons that we wanted to make sure that we bring private capital to infrastructure is to restore this level of investment in infrastructure. We were suffering from this decline. Let me just show you another slide. So just to one of the reasons that, again, was such a level of low infrastructure that public government cannot needed to look for partners, private partners, is obviously that we were facing a tremendous deficit. We inherited a deficit that was 44% of our government revenues. And here you can see it. I mean, it's very clear. The revenues of the government, when we came in, they were, of the general fund, which is the budget of the central government, were around $7.6 billion. But the government was actually spending $3.3 billion on top of that. So there was no way that we were going to restore investment in infrastructure with this high level of deficit. We experienced one of the highest, if not the highest, deficit in the nation, and it was a very limiting factor. We needed to go out and look for private investment. There was no other choice. So the general approach for us in terms of PPPs, the way we see this and we approach it is that we look at infrastructure and that in a different way, that you have different tools. There's a toolbox for investing in infrastructure. Obviously, you have your typical things. A government has their typical things, their public bonds, their taxation. We just included a new tool for doing that, which is public-private partnership, which is a systematic way of bringing private investment into public infrastructure. And we did legislation for that. We approved legislation in 2009. And that established a clear policy framework in which we will promote investment, a private investment or private participation in public infrastructure across all infrastructure. We can do toll roads, we can do schools, we can do airports, ports, different things, even waste management facilities, elderly housing. We can do a lot of things, correctional facilities, as long as they are conducted under the legislation on the very transparent basis in a very systematic way. So also the legislation created the Public-Private Partnerships Authority, which is the entity that I lead, and which has allowed us to create a consolidated framework and having consistency across all infrastructure projects. So this is kind of the background in which we created all the projects that we have done and all the efforts, and it's been very successful until now.
So one of the interesting aspects of your program is that you do have a centralized structure for decision making. You have this PPP authority, who is the, I call it a center of excellence, but you're really the driver for the entire Puerto Rico government, for PPP projects. And that's a pretty unique approach, I mean, in the US at least. Around the world, that's a very common approach for delivering privately financed infrastructure. But in the US, that's one of the best practices that Adrian and Bob and I are constantly talking about to policymakers in the US, which is you actually can get more of these types of projects done if you have a vehicle that is set up to do that, right? As opposed to giving existing agencies the responsibility of figuring out how to use a new and complex tool. So can we just switch gears for a second and to talk about the authority and the work that you do? You know, can you describe the role of the PPP authority more in depth? And what benefits have you seen from having that centralized approach as opposed to having individual agencies out there trying to pursue these projects without experience doing it themselves?
Sure. I think that you described it correctly. We are a center of excellence. One of the most important things is having consistency across all the projects. When you have different government agencies trying to run different procurement processes, it just becomes overextended. All the different agencies have different approaches to different projects. Investors start running around going through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different agencies just for one project. They don't know, they find themselves lost. That's not the way to attract private investment. That's not the way we wanna bring fresh capital into the economy and create jobs. So it becomes a very cumbersome process, very bureaucratic, very specific, and very frustrating sometimes. We have consolidated all that into this agency. They had to go just to one place for particular projects. We don't run all the projects. It's difficult to, being a new government agency, we cannot run all of a sudden 100 projects. So we had taken it one project at a time type of approach. So at the same time, you have consistency across, transparency. We use our website in a great deal. And again, when you go back to the traditional model, not all the government agencies are transparent in the very same degree. They vary. Some of them are not transparent at all. Some are just slightly transparent in their processes. So we have contributed to consolidating the processes, being more transparent, even communicating to the public more effectively. That has gone a long way. We just do it. We come with the DOT secretary, will put together a roundtable and just one message, one project. So it's very organized, and that has helped a great deal in maximizing the way we do projects and procurement in Puerto Rico.
Well, let's talk about some of the projects. This is always the fun part for me, is getting into the weeds of the actual projects. This is where the theory and all the things that we write about in our policy shop actually come into play in real life. So this is always the fun part. So let's start with your schools initiative, because I find this to be one of the more fascinating aspects. Most states that have shifted into public-private partnerships have, as I mentioned, have started with transportation. That's sort of the leading edge, so to speak, of the private infrastructure market. We've all heard about it. Bob has been writing about, you know, that kind of model for years and years, and it's happening out there all over the place. What's now emerging is the use of that same type of tool elsewhere, and I've always thought that K-12 schools would be a perfect application for the public-private partnerships. They're always out of money in the facilities, you know, I mean, it's a great, there's a lot of opportunity there, I think, that when the education establishment figures out that this finance tool is out there, I think we'll start to see more of it. And I think once you start to see projects like this one, we'll see more of it. So can you talk about the Schools for the 21st Century Initiative? Tell us where you're starting from, what the goals were, and how you're getting there.
Sure. This is one of the first projects that we generated under the P3 authority, that's the way we call it. Actually, we started from for a very clear need for investment. What you can see here is samples of 6 different public schools in Puerto Rico. By the way, we have a very extended, large public school system in Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico has 1,400 schools, and we have schools of all sizes and shapes. It's incredible. We have even schools that are from 300 students all the way to 1,000 students. We may have schools that have 25 students. I mean, It is the clear example of Gorman being overextended because we build schools for every community. So the maintenance of the infrastructure is a real challenge in Puerto Rico, and Gorman funds, with the deficit that we have and the scarcity of resources, obviously maintenance is something that is being a big challenge for Gorman. So this is some of the conditions of the infrastructure that you can see in some of these schools. I mean, all these schools that you're seeing here were selected to be modernized, and obviously modernized with the collaboration of the private sector, and we'll tell you a little bit more about each. But we look for even examples where the students were put at risk with conditions that were not in a tropical climate like Puerto Rico. Having outdoor furniture doesn't work. It just it shouldn't happen, right? Students should be able to go out and have fun, play, and do some learning activities. So there are all kinds of good. So there was a clear need for investment in public schools. This is what we did. The government looked for ways to finance better modernization of existing public schools. We did not want to rebuild or build new schools, really. We wanted to take care of this actual stock of schools. We do not need more schools. We need better schools. So we team up with the private sector in order to put together a program which is private sector will design, build, and do the maintenance of the school. The funding was a public source funding that was very, very favorable in terms of cost. It was very cheap capital. So we decided to put some public funds together with innovation in construction, design, and maintenance of the private sector. And we've created a platform there where we're going to deliver faster and deliver savings for the government, and we'll transform 100 public schools. And all this created very wide support for public-private partnerships. This is the first time in Puerto Rico that we take a serious step in integrating the private sector into the infrastructure of the education system. Before, all these steps, besides being publicly financed, all these steps were government steps. So traditional procurement will do the whole design. You actually will do 100% design. The school will have to be designed fully before you actually build it, and then a maintenance will be also government. In this 100 schools, all this is transferred to the public, to the private sector. And the results are incredible. I mean, it has allowed for faster delivery of modernization of schools. Jobs are being created and investment is happening in schools. Obviously, we went through all the headaches of moving students to other schools and all that, but people are getting involved, their jobs are being created, and investment is quickly moving into the economy to different schools in different municipalities across Puerto Rico. So a very interesting project that is having a substantial impact in the economy, and this is what we want. Partnering with the private sector to create and faster deliver better projects and create jobs.
Okay. So now let's move on to the next project, the second PPP project that you had in your toll roads. And last year you finalized a 40-year billion-dollar lease of the PR-22 and PR-5 toll roads. Can you tell us about this initiative and what prompted it and what improvements you expect?
Sure. Similar but different approach. This one is fully financed. This is a picture of the toll road that we call PR-22. It's the largest and the busiest toll road in Puerto Rico. Actually, this here is the largest toll plaza in Puerto Rico. Very, very congested. A need of a lot of public work, public investment. And very difficult to maintain under the fiscal constraints that we had. So we decided to team up with the private sector, in which we will do a long-term lease of the toll road, and a private sector will come and do all the investments, all the improvements, and operate the toll road for a 40-year term. Here, again, just a sample of the conditions that we were facing. you have even from safety conditions in which the electrical system of some of the highway was not functioning correctly, even the guardrails were not in good shape. So those are safety pavement conditions. You can see how we needed to restore investment here. So we did a procurement process, a PPP procurement, in which we invited the private sector to come and do a payment for the rights and for operating the toll road for a 40-year concession. The toll road revenue will flow to the private sector, and they would do a great program of public improvements. They will deal with congestion, and still the government will monitor the compliance of operating standards for the toll road. So this way, September of last year, we closed a deal after the procurement in which a consortium composed by Goldman Sachs and a Spanish toll road operator, whose name is Abertis, they won the procurement for actually maintaining and operating PR-22 together with PR-5, which is a smaller toll road here with just one toll plaza. There are seven toll plazas across this toll road here, which is the one you saw in the pictures. It's a 40-year concession, it's a long-term lease. It was successfully closed, very good. There now, you travel the toll road now, you can see people working, doing the landscaping, improvements in the lighting and all that. So people are seeing already the difference of private participation and investment in public infrastructure, something that the state just did not have, the government did not have the resources to conduct in a very fast and diligent way.
And just as an aside, if you did not have the PPP approach for this project, how long would it have taken in government to get this?
Oh, no, there were no resources in the Highway and Transportation Authority to do this. There was, besides not having the resources to do the investment needed to restore pavement conditions, which are better for drivers, or even safety conditions, there was no resources to do that. Even they were confronting problems with managing correctly the toll plazas, where we were experiencing revenue leakage. I mean, they were not actually, there was an estimated amount of revenue leakage there. So, I mean, not only the physical improvements, also the operational administrative managerial part was not at the standards that we wanted to. So, I mean, we put it all there, all in the contract. We were very clear in making sure we want to require world-class operating standards for the toll roads. And now the Transportation Authority, what they do is just manage that is being in compliance to, and is working very nicely so far, yes. So, no, a lot of time, a lot of resources that we did not have, we were not going to expect to have a world-class infrastructure like we're going to have very soon. It will take very, very long if we are going to ever to experience that.
Very long, if ever. Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So let's shift to the third PPP project. You're actively currently pursuing a long-term concession for the San Juan Airport. So tell us about the goals there and what you're trying to achieve.
Sure. Very similar to the toll road. You all been here. This is the largest airport in the Caribbean, and it has the largest market share of seats of travelers into the Caribbean region. There's need for investment here. Is being managed by the Ports Authority, who has a very deteriorated credit profile at this point. They cannot even issue bonds anymore. They're not in the public markets. And the infrastructure has deteriorated some. This is just a sample. Even safety conditions are not the best. And obviously, accommodation for passengers that had to wait in gates or wait to pick up, being picked up by family or friends are not the best. We want to change that, and we want to take an approach in which a private sector will come in, private investor will come in and operate the airport, improve and conduct a series of capital investments, and just apply world-class standards and practices to a better airport. We believe that, I mean, we have it We've been running it for many years, and it is we have what we have right now, but definitely being the largest airport in the Caribbean, we want to have and deliver a better experience for the traveler. So for us, this is not just a financial transaction. It's an economic measure, really. We want to improve and the infrastructure and bring more passengers to Puerto Rico. This is crucial, being an island. You want to make sure that not only passengers and individuals can come and with ease in and out for pleasure or for business into Puerto Rico, but also the international trade. A lot of the 46% of our international trade is by air, and 90% of that is handled at this airport. So we want to make sure that the cargo business is well run. So right now we're about in the final phase of having a procurement process for this, in which the private sector will take the risk of financing, operating, and maintenance, and improving the airport. A major undertaking, I think, will be the first U.S. PPP airport in the U.S. We're very excited about improving this in a long-term basis and delivering a better experience for passengers. This is what we're working on. I'm fully dedicating like 90% of my time just to this now. But we're in the final phase of this, and it will be a great experience to show to the rest of the nation that airports also can benefit from private investment and well-run and world-class standards. And we're fascinated by the fact that having more passengers into Puerto Rico will be a great thing for economic development. And again, a driver of positive change, creating jobs and better trade with other parts of the world. So that's the general intent there.
Okay. And so what else is coming in the pipeline? What's next?
Sure, we're very busy, have a pipeline of working with other, like you mentioned. We just launched a project for the private sector to design, build, finance, and maintain a juvenile correctional facility. We believe that, again, the infrastructure part can be handled better by the private sector. A lot of innovation can be achieved there in the correctional facility. We have also other transportation projects. We're looking at new greenfield extensions of the highway system, we're not even considering issuing bonds or public debt for that, or having any tax money into transportation that can be well run and paid by users and financed by private sector. So that's more transportation, correctional facilities, probably more schools, and finishing the airport. That's what we have in the next 8 months for us in the P3 Authority in Puerto Rico.
Okay. And what would you say makes Puerto Rico an attractive place for investment?
I think that obviously the approach that we have taken has gone a long way in providing comfort to the private sector. We're being transparent. We've been very rigorous in the projects. We don't launch a project until we study it, research it, and understand and prepare ourselves to go out to make sure that the private sector is not wasting time or resources in getting into a procurement that is not well thought out. So we're dedicating a lot of effort to that. Also, we are a U.S. territory. We are a U.S. jurisdiction with all the judicial system of the U.S., obviously, banking system that is regulated by all the federal government agencies, and all that. That provides also additional comfort. But I think the approach and the fact that Puerto Rico is a vibrant economy, is the largest economy in the Caribbean. We have a very strong consumer sector, a very strong manufacturing sector. All those things combined make us an interesting investment destination for the private sector.
Okay. So with that, I would like to open up the... Well, first, can we give a hand to David Alvarez, please?
Thank you.
All right, now I'd like to open it up to questions.
Okay, wait till I get to you with the... Oh, can you turn this one on? Okay.
Hi, see, so obviously the private sector is way better at operating most of the public assets. And all these, did you say 1,000 schools?
I said 1,400 schools.
So there's 1,400 schools, I see that they're involved in the infrastructure. When are you going to dump all 1,400 over to someone to run them?
Yeah, correct. That's the question that we have. The schools for the 21st century is being run, and the governor lost this project. I mean, even the communities, they are very excited about the opportunity of being extended to other schools. We are working now on extending that to more than 100 schools, adding another set of 100 schools maybe into the program. So we go little by little to make sure that that we extend the program to the rest of the schools. Again, a lot of the schools in Puerto Rico were built in a different decade for a different purpose. Population was growing at a faster rate. Right now, there's a lot of stock of schools that probably won't be needed in the future. So there's also an exercise that we had to do of consolidating schools. So now we're just focusing on rather than having the quantity of schools being spread around, is more the quality of schools. So we're probably going to have a second round of schools for the 21st century program, together with some consolidation that makes sense in reducing the number of schools.
I'm not talking about infrastructure, I'm talking about operating, I'm getting rid of the...
That's another whole set of big question in Puerto Rico. Hopefully we'll get to that point soon.
Is it on your agenda?
It is on our agenda. Obviously, it is contemplated in our P3 legislation, and I think this was a very important first step. People will see the difference. They see that private sector can make a difference in the educational system, and that has been very welcome. So hopefully this will help us get there.
In many parts of the United States, privatization and public-private partnerships tend to be politically controversial. Your program now is up and running for several years. What's been the political reaction of media? Is it a controversial issue, or so far are you having mostly good support from the public and from legislators and so forth?
It is a controversial issue. So far, I think that there's a recognition that the government has a chronic deficit, that there's need to think of out of the box, let's say, and look for alternatives. So there's a level of recognition there. People will accept it as long as they understand it. The public schools was one where we debated a long time because people were thinking that we were just selling the schools or something. We explained that the private sector was just, at this point, building and doing infrastructure. And we even went to the communities and presented, this is your school now, this is how it's going to look. We have an entire team that goes to the communities and have kind of grassroots meetings. So explaining goes a long way. In the toll roads, what we did is the same thing that we're going to do in the airport. We're going to make sure that the private sector delivers a difference early in the process, making sure that people will start seeing the difference within months of awarding the deal is important, because they want to see things different. They want to see things that are improving, and that has gone a long way in terms of the toll roads deal. For the airport, we're doing the same approach. I mean, in the toll roads transaction, the private sector has to invest $75 million in the first 3 years of the concession. So it's very upfront loaded. And the airport will be the same approach. That approach has gone a long way for us. Controversies are there, questions, people ask questions. We have, together with our approach, we have not been shy and go out and being open about it and say, listen, this is what we're doing because we believe in this and we're gonna create jobs this way too.
And you've even run TV commercials explaining the program and explaining that's a very unique thing, by the way. Yeah. How many of you have seen TV commercials in your jurisdictions on some new innovative government program? You know, these guys are out there actually trying to actively communicate. Not only are they doing the implementation of the projects, but you're trying to communicate it in a very innovative way that I've not seen anywhere else in the U.S.
Yeah, we had dedicated efforts in even doing TV commercials. I mean, for the schools, I think we put together like 3 different TV commercials. For the toll roads, we put together 4 TV four TV commercials that were different, and they run for some time. The airport, we had TV commercials running up to the 31st of December last year. We're going out and explaining what we really want. And what we really want is economic development, again, positive change. And so far, it's been well received. So obviously, every project is unique. The airport might be seen different. The correctional facility might be seen different. But we even run focus groups on every project, see how the perception of people are. And we try to tackle that and put a communication strategy around that as a function of that. So that's important.
Great. Thank you. Back here.
A couple of questions, if I may. You had mentioned that one of the pleasant byproducts is the creation of jobs. But of course, there's also a loss of jobs. There's a transfer of workers from public workers to private workers. And I would think one of the goals would be a net loss of jobs, because you can probably have fewer workers working more efficiently. So what if you can speak to what happens to the public workers who are no longer doing the job, their job being replaced by private workers? And a totally separate question, on the toll roads, there's an issue, it seems to me, that on these 40-year toll road concessions, there's a risk that the concessionaire defaults and doesn't perform their job. And I was just curious, very briefly, without getting too much in the weeds, what kind of financial controls do you have so that to protect yourself against the financial downside of an operator who discovers they bid too low and they're losing money and they walk from the job?
Sure. On the jobs question, that's a very important question. I mean, one of the reasons we are doing this is because we want the private sector to grow. We have taken an approach in which we analyze in detail the number of public officials and public jobs that are kept by or are dedicated to each of these infrastructures. We have the ability to provide an opportunity, really, to public workers, and we tell them that they can go to the private sector, or they can stay within the public sector. That has gone a long way also in allowing more well-received all the projects. The reality is that a lot of people tend to go to the private sector. So you either have some public officials going to the private sector and some others decide to stay. And the ones that decide to stay, we have relocated them in other toll roads or in other parts, in other type of jobs and things like that. But we keep them. Some others have gone and take advantage of different retirement windows that we have opened simultaneously with this. So the private concessionaires have taken the public employees, and actually they want to recruit the public employees, really, and have created, not all the public employees have transferred, they have created additional jobs into the, to make sure that they cover the difference. Now, a lot of the new incremental jobs happen when you require new investment in the capital improvements. I mean, jobs in construction, jobs in improving the pavements, doing all kinds of things. Those are newly created jobs into the economy that a lot of them work as a stimulus, immediate stimulus for the economy, which helps you again to jumpstart the economy and get things moving. So, yes, it's a complicated equation. Some public jobs will be retained in the government. But definitely the ones that are dedicated to the capital improvements, that's all incremental new jobs into the economy. And these companies, they would maximize the public infrastructure. The toll roads operator wants more traffic, so they will tend to do more improvements along the life of the concession, and that will be all private sector new jobs. So that's the approach that we're taking there. Into that. The other question was, I want to make sure I remember the other question was the one related to, was it the approach of the...
Default, how do you protect yourself against...
Yeah, okay, the default. You're right. I mean, the public interest has to be protected. One particular item before before going into more into the detail, the public-private partnership model of delivering infrastructure has an operator of the infrastructure. Investors will come in pairs. They will come as a team, and usually you get an operator of the infrastructure and a financial partner. If the operator is having troubles financially, the financial partner would not put the concession at risk, would not put the contract at risk, and probably they will take action before they go into default. They will replace the operator with somebody else, even the lenders of the concessionaire. So the contract, the model itself is robust in that sense. We have the right, the government has the right, reserves the right to replace the operator. And actually strike a deal with the lenders or the financial partners if the operator is about to go default, because that's something that you want to avoid. So we're fully protected that we have reserved all the rights, contrarily speaking, we have reserved all the rights to replace any financiers or any of the operators in case of default.
How far, or do you have a roadmap for future projects, and how many projects and how far into the future does it go?
We have a pipeline of projects that right now we're running two procurements of the airport, which is in the final phase of the procurement process. And we have this new facility correction, a juvenile facility that we just launched that is going to be a 2012 project. After that, we're going to concentrate back in transportation with some new greenfield, new construction projects of certain highways, including PR-22, the one that you saw is not... It does not cross as the north of Puerto Rico fully. There's an extension that we want to complete. We have a pipeline of between 2 and 5 projects, additional projects that we want to launch. So it goes well into 2016 right now at this point. And again, we're taking one project at a time. We want to make sure that at the beginning of the program, we got it right. We were not trying to do all projects at once. So it's important that from the schools we learn, we're applying things. From the toll roads we learn, we're applying things for the future. And the toll roads, again, I mean, in the pipeline, again, it goes well into, again, next 3 or 4 years of new projects coming into the pipeline based on a lot of the experience that we have built early in the process.
Thank you so much. Thank you both.
Thank you all.